Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, our guest Jeff Ousley wanted to be a chef, but he wanted to be on our show more, so he became a roadie and a guitar tech for the likes of Pearl Jam, Neil Young, Leon Russell, and has worked with Hart for over the past 20 years. We'll talk with him about these gigs and much more. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater at www.sweetwater.com. Make sure to tell them Flow Guitar sent you. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you. This is going to be a real fun show. I'm looking forward to it. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I am doing fine.
I know you've been busy editing. Anything coming up that you can tell us about video-wise?
Well, I posted up Audio Technica videos, and trying to think of the other stuff. There was, Ratco, the Fat Rat, and some Evolution cables. And then I'm working on Taylor guitars, so stuff on the 600 series, the 400 series, the Big Baby, and the Marshall amp, the Silver Jubilee, which
yeah, that was very nice.
Getting a lot of buzz. Be working on that. And some stuff from Orange Amps will be coming this week.
That's a lot of stuff. You know you've done a lot of videos when you can't remember. There's so many of them.
Yeah, there's a few. So, there's more coming.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and we're going to come back with Jeff Ousley. And he's going to tell us some stories of the road, a lot of gear, a lot of guitars. So we'll be right back after this.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at Sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at Sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
Hi, this is Elliot Easton of the Empty Hearts, and you're listening to Scott and Jeff on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
Welcome back. Okay, let's get into this. It's going to be an interesting night, and we got a lot to cover. Anyway, a few months ago, I got a text from Craig Bartok, and he said, you need to get this guy on the show. And I said, great, it sounds good. And we corresponded, and now we finally got Jeff. Jeff, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to have you on.
Hello. Hey, Jeff. How are you?
It's going to be a little weird. Two Jeffs here, but it's okay. But anyway, I mean, we're going to focus a lot on – I mean, you've been touring recently and just got back from a tour from with Hart. But some of the people you played with, I'm just going to mention a few of them, I mean, that you've worked with, is pretty incredible. Leon Russell, Edie Brickell and the Bohemians, a replacement.
Edie Brickell.
Excuse my pronunciation. George Michael, Pearl Jam, Neil Young, which I'm going to be asking you some questions, David Bowie, Elvis Costello, and Steve Miller, another one. So you've got a pretty good roster of people there. But let's go right first into Heart. I want to go into that because you sent me a picture, which I posted up on the Facebook page, and it's a stage shot, a very cool shot, by the way, of seeing the audience. And you can see Nancy's setup on the her amp setup and pedal board. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Okay, well, that shot was in St. Augustine Beach, Florida, in the amphitheater here, which is actually right down the street from my house. We were doing a show in my hometown, so it's easy to go to work. Well, we started a leg of a tour there, so I didn't get to come home at the end of the night and sleep in my own bed, but we started the tour there, and basically that's her amps that you see in the picture. It's a Buddha SD30 head and a Fender Tone Master head that we kind of use both. We mainly use the Buddha lately, and then the pedal board, which I control all her pedals and do all her changes, cues and stuff from there, which is she's a less is more player. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically just some vintage stomp boxes and nothing over the top, no digital stuff, and she's got it in her hands. You know, she's a player, so she doesn't need a lot, and she's a less is more kind of thing, with definitely like three you know, sounds, a clean, a dirty channel, and then sometimes we use a clean with a distortion pedal for clean with a little bit of grit. That's what she mm-hmm. calls it, you uh-huh. know. And like there's a vintage Ibanez, a very old Ibanez flanger pedal that we use for the Barracuda, which we've been through a lot. We used an ADA flanger forever, mm-hmm. and then I used some Toadworks Barracuda pedal that was designed by Howard Leese we've used, and I'm back to using the Ibanez phaser pedal, the old one that used 2 9 volts, an 18 volt pedal, mm-hmm. and it gets a good sound. And there's some Buddha pedals that we're trying out, like a distortion pedal with a distortion, then like a little bit more too. There's like two buttons on it, so mm-hmm. and you get a little bit more. And let's see, there's a Holy Grail, Electro-Harmonics Holy Grail for a reverb sound, and another like TS. Now, I have like two distortion pedals for two different distortion sounds when we do the clean with grit, and channel switcher, and that's about it. You know, nothing over the top. Sometimes for the newer songs, we have a phase pedal that we put in, but everything's pretty much, it's all pretty much organic, nothing, no digital effects over the top with her.
Hey, Jeff, I was going to ask you, this is Scott, by the way, I wanted to ask, she plays one of the guitars that not a lot of people play. I'm just kind of curious to see, you know, what your opinion of it and why she likes it as the Gibson Nighthawk.
Nighthawk. Well, in the early 90s, she had helped design that guitar, and it was designed as the Strat Killer. It was a five-way pickup switch, kind of the cross between a Fender and a Gibson, a light body, smaller body. And then Heart kind of went on blocks in the early 90s, probably 94 to about 99, which it was like your grandpa's truck in the backyard. The grass is growing around, we're not selling it, but we're going to fix it back up, which they did. They fixed back up Heart, and we're back out. And she designed this guitar, but after they stopped kind of touring, it kind of went to the wayside. But she did help design that guitar.
I actually happen to be one of the owners of one of those Nighthawks. Not hers, but I have.
Right, yeah.
I have one of the more unusual ones. I have the one with the Floyd Rose in it.
Oh, okay, yeah. And hers does not. We're off of the Floyd Rose stuff. Not too many dive bombs going on these days, you know. But
well,
sometimes she thinks she's playing a Floyd Rose, and she'll hit a Bigsby really hard, and you know, we know you can't do that.
Yeah, I bought it because I'm a huge fan of Steve Vai, but I don't like the super skinny necks on those type of guitars, so that was my compromise. So I can still pick that guitar up and throw it around and do all kinds of dive bombs, but
yeah, that fun. Yeah, you can do.
What other guitars does she use on stage or for this tour?
Let's see, for her, like Even It Up, Straight On You, and a few other is a 63 Tele, the blue Telecaster with the blue headstock. Had that forever, as long as I've known her, and which is a long time. And let's see, we have a 68 SG with a Bigsby that me and a friend found at a pawn shop, or a secondhand music store in Seattle. I wouldn't really call it a pawn shop. It's the Trading Musician. We found for, I think, $400, and then we did a lot of work on it. Mike Lull in Seattle did a lot of work on it. I've done a bit of work on it and put a Bigsby on it, put graphite saddles in it, and I've also used another little thing for the Bigsby, little piece that you can put on the end of Bigsby. I'm trying to think of the name of it right
string
off
spoiler.
The top of my head.
The string spoiler?
Yep, that's it. And
that's
it
cool.
Works really well. Really well. The spoiler, and you can change a Bigsby in about 3 minutes.
It's a lot faster.
A long time, and having a friend hold the string for you while you, you know, tuck under and bend and all that stuff. So that works out well. I put that on a couple years ago, and it works really well.
Acoustically.
Acoustically, it's her signature Martin HD35 model that came out probably 7 years ago, eight years ago. She has two of those that we use for mainly all the acoustic stuff. We also have one of the newer Martin DCP with the Aura pickup in it as well. And she uses that on a loan, and it's kind of a backup for the standard stuff. She has a Martin black kind of Johnny Cash style guitar that me and Ann designed. Ann has one as well. It has all the planets down the neck, and it has the stars on the. It has a heart sound hole, obviously, and then it has a lot of stars. I think Orion design on the body. So me and Ann designed that with Martin. And that one she uses for a few things. She uses it. We're doing one song where Ann plays an auto harp and Nancy plays it in a very interesting detuning, and she plays with a bow sitting down on top of a mushroom.
Okay.
To hold up the guitar. So it's on a song called Heaven that they do now. And more electrics. I mean, we have the Nighthawk that you spoke of. We have another like Epiphone kind of Nighthawk that they sent out a prototype of a new tremolo system that seems to work pretty well. We're still kind of playing around with it we use it on a Robin Trower song, Day of the Eagle, that they do a ripping version of. And then she also uses a Duesenberg, which is my guitar that I let my big sister use, and she uses that on a lot of the Heartless, Kick It Out, and it was given to me by Elvis Costello when I worked with him at Duesenberg. Sent it out, and then at the end of the tour, Elvis gave it to me, and I said, thank you, and now I let my sister use it.
Let's go to Craig for a minute. Now, you work on Craig's guitars, or you maintain his guitars too, right?
Not so much. I mean, I help out a lot. There is a guy that does stage left. Doug Redler was doing stage left, who's been with Black Crows, and now has just left the Heart thing to go do Slash's guitar. So he is right now. He just finished.
Oops.
Us in New Zealand, and now he is in Japan with Slash. So I'm welcoming in a new tech on stage left coming up.
Oh, okay. But can you tell us what Craig's using?
Craig uses Vox AC30s, and he has a couple Line 6 guitars that he uses. And he has a lot of like custom Telecasters. He has a early 70s Strat that he uses for pretty much Magic Man and a lot of the Strat sounding guitars, and he has a Taylor acoustic, a Takamine 12 string. He has a lot of custom Tele guitars made by Jason Stockwell, who was the tech several years ago for about 10 years with us, mm-hmm. who's now looking after Neil Giraldo with Pat Benatar.
Now, he had mentioned, we had him on the show, and he had mentioned that he, I know he used it on his album, he used an Ovation that Nancy owned that they used the Nashville tuning. Do they use that live?
Not so. When we did an acoustic thing, we had a couple of songs where he did that. Not lately.
Okay.
He also has a late 60s Les Paul, Black Les Paul, Black Beauty that he plays. Pretty sure it's a 68 or 69 Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, back to the acoustics. How do you kind of tame the beast of an acoustics? What do you guys do to prevent feedback, and what pickups do you generally use in those Martins and things like that?
It's a Fishman pickup. I think it's the Gold series that we use. And feedback, she's pretty good control about it. We run the acoustics. The main acoustic goes, we play on a cord, obviously, no wireless stuff, straight into a Groove Tubes Ditto box. And then it is fed from the out to Trace Elliott TA-100 acoustic amps that are kind of, the volume-wise is not really that high, you know, but it's kind of, you know, she gets a full sound on the stage, and she's really good about, you know, controlling the feedback and stuff. She knows not to turn around and stand right up in front of the amps with the acoustic, but I have it tuned down pretty much that I kind of check that, make sure that's not going to happen. You know, I kind of find a happy median of the volume there, when so that's not going to happen. So we don't use any sound hole covers or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had mentioned nothing over the top digital effects wise, so you don't use any processing from the board? Like you might do an overall flange on something?
I mean, on acoustic wise, no, it's just a dry signal. You know, they'll use some sort of effects on a vocal. A reverb on a vocal, and that's about it. But nothing guitar-wise.
Okay.
It's straight signal, straight to the board.
Okay. Do you know by chance what if Craig's using a lot of effects, or is he pretty straight too?
He has a couple Line 6, you know, switchblade knife effects. You know, the green one, the delay unit. He has a distortion unit. He has a couple other distortions. He has. A Boss Distortion Plus, and he has a couple delay pedals, and you know, like I said, the Line 6, the green delay guy, and a flange. He has a Dunlop flange pedal and a carbon copy Dunlop pedal, and it's pretty much you know, stomp boxes straight, you know, into the amp.
Right.
Guitar, stomp boxes, amp.
Okay, so pretty much their whole setup, it's coming out of their amps. There's no other, there's no other effects done at the PA.
No rack, no fridge, no fridges with stuff in it, you know, on the side. No, we're all pretty much, you know, what you see is what you get. Nothing's auto-tuned on the side. When they squeak, when the vocals squeak, it's them squeaking, and that doesn't happen very much.
Mm-hmm.
It's the real thing.
Now, the setup that you have there, is it pretty straightforward in terms of setting it up? How long does it take you to put that up on stage?
Gosh, it's pretty simple. Probably half an hour at the most.
Oh, wow.
If that, you know, it's all, you know, it's another day at the office. We just keep moving the office.
Right.
You know, got to make things somewhat easy to put up, you know, and I can do it all myself. Of course, I use stagehands the best of my ability, but mainly it's me. You know, it's two amps. Basically, we're running just one guitar amp. The other one's a spare, loaded, you know, all the time, and everything's ready to go. You got to be, you know, what if something happens? What are you going to do to keep the show going? That's my big thing, is what are you going to do? What if this happens? What if? And, you know, I go by eye movement, too. She looks at me in, you know, one way, and then, okay, I know what to happen. That just happens from time of being her tech for a long time,
mm-hmm.
knowing what she wants and getting through it.
Now, you said that you handle all her pedals remotely. Is there custom wiring to get that, or are you near where the pedal board is?
I'm right there. It's right by the amps where you see it in the picture.
So that's, you're sitting right back there where the amp
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right. That's over off stage right, and that's right there. I've got them right in front of the amps, and I'm doing her switches. I handle all her cables. Her cables run from there. So she comes to me for changes, and that's it. We're pretty much clockwork.
Now, what cabinets are she using with those amps?
She uses the orange 30-watt. Orange cabinets.
Is it a 2x12 or 4x12?
4x12.
Okay. And those are just back off stage, or are they on stage, or
They're on stage, and then three Trace Elliott TA100 amps are on top, linked together.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. Now, you've worked with her for 20-plus years. That's what you had told me.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How has this system evolved? I mean, what was it like for – is it changed a lot since when you
first – Well, we used to have the big Marshall amps, and everything was turned up, and everything was big, big, big. And now it's one head, one cabinet. Or, you know, two heads and one cabinet, you know, or two heads and two cabinets. It's mm-hmm. You know, it's gotten big, then it went kind of small, then it went back. It's been this kind of setup for 10 or 12 years, a couple of different amp heads, but pretty much the same. She knows her sound, she likes it, and she doesn't want to change anything. She's a less is more person.
Right,
you know?
Right.
She's got it in her hands.
Is the stage fairly quiet, per se, or is it even with that cabin, is it still pretty loud up there?
Oh, it can be loud, you know, but I remember when everything was turned up, but now you got the sound guy or whoever going, you got to turn down. Come on. That's why I use the Buddha amps now. When I used to have the Tone Masters, I could barely get them off of three, you know, and when you play a Tone Master on two, you've got a mosquito, you know, it just doesn't open up yet. So, and I still have got a lot of room to move, to use on the Buddha amps, but I can seem to get them a little bit louder opposed to a 100-watt head than a 30-watt head.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Tone Master lately, I've taken the two outside tubes out, and now it's a 50-watt instead of a 100-watt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it would break up a little easier.
Yeah.
It'd sound better. Now, let me pick your brains and go a little – speaking of volume, you had mentioned that you worked with Neil Young and Crazy Horse, and I think at that time in the 90s, you said – that's when they were doing that, where he had one of the most loud. Wasn't that when he had that huge setup with the giant facade of amps?
That was kind of in the era. I worked with him 95 and 96 and 97 with Neil Young with Crazy Horse.
Right.
So didn't really have that. They brought that back. That was like early in the Weld era, I think early 90s, like 90, 91, and then I think lately they brought the big facade of amps and stuff.
But was his setup pretty loud? Even with, I know he used the Deluxe with the Whizzer on it.
Yes. Yes. So. Yes, very loud.
Was that probably one of the
very loud with hello?
Yeah, right, you're there.
Okay. Say that again?
No, it was very loud with, I mean, compared to anything else you've done, was that probably the loudest gig you did?
Let's see. Yeah, that's one of them, because you had these huge side fills that are usually PA stack cabinets,
mm-hmm.
you know, the old Maryland sound, you know, PA cabinets that he used as side fills. So he's no in-ear monitors or anything, so he's straight up. So, yes, it is loud, and it sounds like a plane taking off. And it is what it is. It's him.
Yeah.
And I've seen Neil play, I think it was a Pearl Jam show. He came and played. He plugged into a Fender Twin, turned every knob to Cleveland, and it sounded like Neil Young. So it is in his hands, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's in his hands.
What was your impression of the Whizzer? Now, for those that don't know, he has this mechanical device that he puts on. It sits right on top of the – it's a Tweed Deluxe.
Yep.
And it basically mechanically changes the settings of the amp. So it's like a preset system, but it's totally mechanical. What did you think of that? Was it pretty stable, or did it have problems?
It had a few little things here and there. I remember one time in Europe, he at the end of a show, he had his amp guy flown in from California. We were in Germany, I think. At the end of the day, they go, yep, Sal's coming tomorrow. Sal Trentino, rest in peace, that built the Whizzer and worked on all his amps. And I was like, yeah, right. So there I am. I wake up off the bus in Frankfurt, and there he is in the lobby with his toolbox. I was like, wow, he did come. So he had to come work on it and change some switches out on the big pedal board. But it's a pretty incredible thing. It's like it's a guy. It's a mechanism, basically, that models a guy sitting there turning knobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a little guy inside that box turning all the knobs. it's pretty interesting. You know, it's definitely pretty incredible.
And he built that a while ago. He's used that for a long time.
It has. It's more than 25 years at least.
Yeah.
Maybe 30.
What did when you were working with Neil, what was he using at that time? Can you remember what the guitars he was using?
Oh, he mainly is his old Blackie, and then he had a gold Les Paul that he used as a backup that he didn't use very much. That was about it.
No Gretches?
No, not on that. He did not. It was out, and he would play it every once in a while, like at a sound check or something, a rehearsal. But mainly it was the two. It was the Blackie and this gold guitar, gold top that mm-hmm. he played.
Now, besides the Whizzer, was there any other mods done to his deluxe amp?
That would be a Larry Craig question for sure, because he did all this stuff. And I looked after Billy Talbot on the bass on mm-hmm. that one. I wasn't looking after Neil, but I was there in the camp.
Yeah. Well, what was Talbot using?
It was a Fender Bassman and an old tan Fender Bassman and a Showman.
Oh, okay. Was that loud enough, or were they relying on the PA system to drive his system?
He was pretty loud. He was Billy Talbot, you know. It was definitely one string at a time. And, you know, as he says, Neil says, you're the third best garage band in the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Pearl Jam, can you talk a little bit about their setup?
Sure. I was Mike McCready's guitar tech from 93 to 2006. And I mean, his was basically just a lot of stomp boxes in front of amps. And I built a couple rigs for him. We used a Marshall, a 50 watt Plexi. It was a 68, and went through a lot of other amps. We had a clean and a dirty sound that we kind of changed off with a Ernie Ball volume pedal. When it's down, it would go to the clean, full on gas. It was dirty. And so we switched a lot of that. We use a lot of different Bassman for a clean amp. We use some Ampegs for clean amps. I ended up building him, and we had a Sal Trentino amp for a while that he used. That we would basically, he just had like two Marshall cabinets on the stage, one 300 watt Marshall for the clean, and a 100 watt old 100 watt Marshall for the dirty. And I ended up, after the Trentino, we used the Trentino amp for the dirty and the clean. It was a two-channel amp. And then I used a 50-watt into a Demeter ISO box. So mm-hmm. I split the signal from the wireless straight to a kind of a splitter, a tube splitter that was built by a guy named Oliver that used to work at, German guy used to work at THD Amplifiers, and then he built the Hydra tube splitter, which I still had that one. And on like channel one would be the Trentino amp, channel two would be the Marshall 50 watt with the channels jump to the Demeter ISO box, and then which basically was a dry signal. Because Mike used to have a lot of his effects on at once, which the sound man's not too crazy about. And so the sound man had constant dry guitar, AC/DC guitar, coming through the Demeter of the 50 watt Marshall.
So you were using the 50 watt Plexi basically to go direct to the board, right?
Yeah, he would have a mic. It would be a dry signal from the splitter, which would channel one would be all the effects going through the Trentino amp, and channel two would be the Marshall dry signal split straight from from the wireless straight to the dry signal. So it was like no effects whatsoever. He would just have straight Marshall Demeter ISO box and a microphone inside the ISO box.
Did you ever use a system where you had an amp used fully blown out and you were using that like a preamp and then would send it to a stack of other amps or something like
a slave amp?
Well, you're basically using it as an overdrive unit as opposed to as just an amplifier. I've heard of other guitarists that do that, like Steve Stevens. He'll run one Marshall or whatever it is fully blown, and then it goes into a system and it's tapped, so it's a line level, and then it goes and drives the other amp. So he has the Dirt's control, but he gets that like brown tube sound, you know, from the the power tubes. But he's basically driving other amps, a stack of amps. Or for the most part, the guys that you've worked with, are they just basically whatever's ending up in the amp, you're just cranking that amp up and going from it there?
Pretty much. It was the only thing that I did with the Pearl Jam thing. Was like I split the signal because the soundman was like, man, he's got all his effects on. I can't do anything with it, you know. And so that's why I said, well, let's like split the signal at the wireless, send the one feed to the amp that's getting the effects and the other a dry signal. And then, you know, the soundman was like, oh, this is great. I can work with this, you know. And so that's what I don't know what I think he's doing the same thing now. I saw them recently, and I'm not sure what he's using now. He's using a divided by 13 amp, I think, and then a Bassman. But they've changed the setup. I used to have all the amps and everything on the side of the stage. He had a pedal board and two cabinets. That's it.
Oh, okay. Was that the most elaborate setup for a live setup that you use, or was there anything else that was much more elaborate than that?
That was pretty elaborate, I guess. And I had a spare rig. Kind of built in, like there was the three channels on the tube splitter, and the channel three was like a whole nother rig of like a Mesa Boogie amp, preamp, and a VHT power amp that like ran a cabinet that I listened to on the side of the stage of his, you know. That was all, everything was going through it, so I could, you know, if something happens, he used to like to knock over his equipment and all kinds of stuff, you know, so I was always ready, you know, and ready for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be prepared to keep 20,000 people happy.
Okay. But was there anybody else that had like a real elaborate pedal board system that you worked with?
I can't think of anybody, you know, nothing right off that was probably the most elaborate thing. You know,
oh, okay.
When I worked with George Michael, and that was like in 1990, it was the last thing. It was a cover-to-cover tour, and I worked with Carlos Rios, and it was the last years of the fridge racks with, you know, so much, you know, everything, all the delay units and everything. That was probably the most elaborate.
Oh, okay.
And now I've seen Carlos lately with Stevie Nicks, and he's down to a Line 6 amp that he can program on his computer, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a great player, you know, one of the – and the sweetest guys I ever worked for.
Have you seen any trend? You know, I know that Craig uses a lot of inboard effects, and he does a lot of his stuff when he records at home in Pro Tools. But are you seeing a trend towards using the simulated effects? Like, I know that, like, for example, a group like Rush, a lot of they pre-program everything, and it's on laptops. Are you starting to see that, or not yet? I mean, at least
yes and no. And I think the fractal thing and everything going on, which I'm not up to speed on that, you know, to be honest with you. And I'm kind of a stomp box guy, you know, and that's pretty much not on our end. I haven't.
Oh, okay.
But I see it out there, you know, like Scott Appleton that does Alex's guitars and stuff. He does a lot of that stuff and changes the wireless channels on a computer, everything, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not using it on the hard camp.
Yeah, well, it seems like they're pretty much it's pretty defined. It works, and they don't, you know, they got a setup that's pretty bulletproof now. But you'd mentioned with Pearl Jam, you had built some stuff for them. Anybody else that you had to do some custom building?
Oh, let's see. I mean, that was just good. I mean, with Pearl Jam, Mike was a great player, but didn't know a lot about equipment at the time. And just like I had ideas and like, let's do this and bits and pieces that I've picked up, you know, along the way from, you know, creatively borrowing from people. and stuff that I've learned working with other people, but not so much. I've kind of walked into, you know, jobs and try to, you know, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And this mm-hmm. is what this is their sound, and this is what they want. Just keep it. Just keep a spare handy.
Yeah. Well, it seems like with Hart, it's very consistent. They got it. They keep using it. But I see other groups, and they keep changing their system all the time. Like, they'll redesign it. I mean, I think a good example is Rush. They've done different things different times. I mean, the bass player Getty's system is pretty stable, but I mean, consistent. But guitarist, Alex,
changes from a washer and dryer to a chicken stand or whatever, or
right.
a hot dog machine or
right.
popcorn machine. But yeah, that was the thing with, I heard, because I have a couple friends that work with Rush, and it was like, well, Getty wants to change his stuff because Alex always changes his equipment. So he, one time he had a washing machine and a dryer, and the next time he had a chicken roaster and a hot dog machine. And so, but now Getty, I think he was just playing into a DI, but now he uses Orange amps and some other things.
But yeah, but I think now they're not using speaker cabinets. It's all direct.
Right. It's all
tapped in
emulators and stuff.
Now, one of the guys you had mentioned you work with, Steve Miller. He's a very effects oriented guy. What was the situation with him? What was he using, or was he using a lot of effects live?
It was still just stomp boxes. You know, I remember he used like a Boss. I've worked for. Kenny Lewis was a rhythm guitar player. I did his tour in 94. I did one year with Steve Miller. Steve, we were using Rivera amps.
Mm-hmm.
And just, he was just a lot of effects boxes on a pedal board, nothing over the top.
Oh, really? So not that, pretty straightforward. Do you remember what he was using?
Rivera amps. I know he uses a. We had to find this. I mean, Dallas Hsu was his guitar tech that year, a friend of mine that, you know, is famous for doing the Edge and stuff, because U2 was off for a bit, and me and him did that tour. We worked together on some things, and he had got him through a lot of delay units and stuff, you know, because he's going to bring in what he knows best and what he's used. But I think they still, to get that fly like an eagle sound, it was a Boss digital delay.
Mm.
So he's kind of, he knows what he wants and the sound, and there you go.
Do you have any, can you share with us maybe a nightmare story of where something just went wrong and kind of how you fixed it, or, you know, maybe something that's humorous?
Gosh. I remember in Italy a long time ago, and this was definitely on rented equipment. I remember, you know, amps blowing up, going to spare amps, the spare didn't work, and, you know, I've had power problems, of trying to, you know, I remember of like in a Pearl Jam thing where I couldn't get the power was definitely dirty. And I remember running the whole rig off an Orange extension cord, off a lighting power, and it was Ooh. Cleaner, you know, stuff like that where they couldn't get, you know, he had like a 59 Strat, which, you know, is going to buzz. And when the lights come on, you know what, it picks it up. It's doing its job. The invention of the humbucker pickup was invented. But, you know, a single coil pickup is going to pick it up. And I remember running the whole rig off of an Orange extension cord off of lighting power, which some people would say, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you did that. But it was cleaner. And I did it, you know, because, you know, Marshall amps turned all the way up, and a Stratocaster is going to be a hum.
that's right. The have you noticed? I noticed when you went to New Zealand, you guys brought your own stuff, right? With Hart, they brought their own.
We brought bits and pieces. All our guitars, our effects. I brought a Buddha amp with me, and I rent usually Orange amps, the HD30 or the 30 watt Orange amps. But I used the 30 watt the. SD30 Buddha amp. I took one with me,
mm-hmm.
and we took a Trace Elliott amp, because some stuff you just can't get there. But everything else was fine that we got. Craig's Voxes sounded good, and you know, everything's 110 power that we took, so they have, you know, step up transformers for us to plug into.
So the quality of the rentals is pretty well is good. So
it was good. It was good. It can be hit or miss at times, but it's good that you order maybe a little bit more and kind of pick out which ones that sound the best to use.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any?
It's getting better, I should say, throughout the years. It used to be a nightmare. and still can be a nightmare at times.
Do you have any tips for our listeners on when they're out playing and moving from city to city, how they get their guitars to stay in tune and deal with the different weather conditions, climates, and things like that?
Well, there's like some humidifiers you can use, you know, in the cases. Kind of definitely, you know, look at the necks a lot. I'm pretty lucky. A lot of my stuff really stays in pretty well, you know. And when I'm flying a bit, I do detune the guitars a little bit. I know everybody says that, you know, the things are sealed and stuff, but it's all about how they come off the plane, how they get unloaded, you know, from the plane. You know, you could do all the big cargo services, but they're not the guys that load the plane and unload the plane. Mm-hmm. They're just guys before the guys who unload the plane, and it's the way it gets transported and stuff, you know. And it's just a TLC every day of trying to you know, make sure they're packed properly. And I use vaults now, the big vaults that you put the guitars in, and they kind of ride in the big cases without a case, but they're inside of a big case, and you strap them in really well. And to tune, I mean, definitely I change strings a lot to you know, eliminate breakage and stuff, and definitely use a bit of graphite materials to keep things in the nut, to keep things in tune. Big Ben's nut sauce and other things I find at different shops, you know, and a number two pencil works pretty good of graphite there. And there's all kinds of little things that I've found along the way that help.
For a person that doesn't have the guitar vault, what do you recommend if somebody was going to fly a guitar? I mean, I've heard horror stories where the case gets smashed, and I mean, as an anvil case,
you can carry on your guitar. Is the best thing, you know. And when they call for that one little thing, anybody needing extra help getting on the plane early, be that guy. Fake a limp and bring your guitar on. It's all about first come, first serve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just that's a tip. You can not quote me on that, but you can quote me. So I mean, you know, now the law is getting better to bring your guitar on and not have to buy a seat for it or whatever. But if you're walking on with a cello, you might have to buy a seat. But I mean, you know, packing it, putting some nice bubble wrap around the neck or something, or like a towel or a extra t-shirt underneath the neck in your acoustic case or something, so it just doesn't move around a lot if you do have to check it. And a nice hard shell case. I'm trying to get a case for a friend of mine. I saw some of these Superior cases that look pretty good, kind of a fiberglass, hard fiberglass case. And, of course, the expensive flight case. But as soon as an airline sees that, you know, they're going to want to charge you a lot and so on and so forth.
So those like that, there's that SKB case that's supposed to be.
Yeah, those are pretty good. We've been using a lot of those lately. You know, we flew all the stuff in New Zealand in trunks. We put them in their cases and then put them in guitar trunks like you had before the vaults.
Mm-hmm.
So carried those, and that helps a lot. And we used a freight company, you know, Rocket Cargo, shipped all our stuff over.
So it was shipped separately, and the security was a little bit better for doing it that way.
Yeah. But if you're like one guy, or you know, if you're flying with multiple pieces at the baggage, you know, at the curbside or checking them in at the counter, you got pieces, just pack them good, and so they don't move around a lot in the case.
You know, so it's like the movement that causes the damage
a lot, and when they're, you know, coming off the plane, who's unloading it and stuff. So I mean, but if you can carry it on, that's the best I can recommend. But there's not all the time you can do that when you're with a band traveling with, you know, 15 pieces and five people,
right?
You know, pay the excess baggage. And you know, I remember days of going to the airport, you know, with 10 tickets before 9/11, with 10 tickets and taping Stratocasters together, two of them, making one piece out of it. You can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, taping two guitar cases together and stuff, and then, you know, and the rest of the band coming 30 minutes before the flight. But those days are over.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a guitar vault. Who makes that? Can you give us some information on that?
Dean Mitchell makes guitar vaults. Ultra Case makes guitar vaults. I have one of each. I have a Dean Mitchell case that I just had made that's really good. and Ultra Case that makes the kind of the guitar boat kind of guitar stands you always see on the side of the stage. They make a stand-up vault as well, and they're really good. They save my back from having to put, you know, 15 guitars in individual cases and putting them in trunks, and my time of loading out and setting up is cut way down.
So those guitars, when you're done, you just close that case and secure them, and that's
it? Yeah, you strap them in, and there's two, like a strap that goes over the body, a Velcro strap with a big foam pad, and then a thing that secures the neck, and put the door on it, and I have 10 of them in each case, and send them to the truck.
Well, that's not a problem. The ship, but you use a separate cargo company. But if you were going on a commercial airline, that would be no problem to put into a cargo.
Oh yeah, that's definitely, you couldn't put that on a commercial airline. That's definitely for, like, if you're going to freight stuff, a big vault like that. It's a pretty good sized case.
Oh, okay. You
know, so when we do like other shows, I'm flying. I'm at the mercy of the airline.
Anything special you do to pack up the pedal board or that extra amp that you brought? The Buddha amp?
I have like an SKB case for the pedal board that I've kind of got it foamed up and nice. And the amp, a nice flight case, head case that's foamed, road case. Mm-hmm. And the amp is actually really light, so that helps with the weight of it.
Okay. Now, when you're in like a place like New Zealand, it seems like from what I was looking on your Facebook page of some of the pictures and stuff, it seemed like they were pretty hip to equipment and in gear. When you're, especially when you're using older guitars or older amps, is it hard to get like tubes and any other parts, or do you carry a bunch of spares?
I do carry some spare tubes, and I recommend that. You know, you never know. Like I said, I took my own amp, which helped. Took some spare tubes for that amp. And, you know, you've got to remember, you got to expect you're not going to get it. That's how I, you know, okay. What are you going to do? You know, you can't just go to Guitar Center and wherever you're at, you know, or right. Have something shipped out, because it's not going to happen, you know. And we're very lucky. The equipment company we used in out of Christchurch was really good, and they had everything we needed. And like I took a lot of, so I took all my cables, all my looms, everything. I basically had, I just rented the two orange amps in the cabinets. I used one for a spare and one that I went through both of the orange amps to make sure I had the nicer one, the one that sounded the best to use as a spare. Then I had my main amp, and I took the Trace Elliott amp with me because they don't have those there.
Right.
I couldn't get them.
It sounded like everything over there in New Zealand was pretty hip. What about Europe? Is Europe pretty good, or is it hard to get stuff?
Europe is good. I mean, it's gotten a lot better. It used to be kind of a really hit and miss. Or I remember back in the 80s, 90s, I would go to the equipment rental place like the day before and check, you know, or go with a 9-volt battery and make sure all the speakers work. You know, get the 9-volt battery, plug the cord, and then do the pop and make sure the speakers are pushing out. You know, you hear the pop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way to check a speaker cabinet, you know, just as instead of having to plug something in, you're in a cold warehouse in the middle of London and you just want to make sure all these speakers work before they throw them on the truck and you see them in France, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So little things like that when I have the time. And then sometimes you're just rolling the dice. And it's call ahead, you know, knowing somebody that maybe you've worked with over there to make sure you're coming, you're getting this gear. And remember the gear I used last time? Can I get that? You know, it's a relationship.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, most of the companies now that you rent from, because of over the years, you know them. It's the same people, right?
Yeah, most of the time, yeah. And same with, like, getting stuff from SIR here in L.A. or New York. I mean, I'll try to call somebody I know that, like, hey, can you make sure I'm coming? Usually I bring a lot of my own gear. But when you're at the mercy of rental gear, you know, it can be a – that's why when you have rental gear, you have to show up a little early to check it all out and order more than you need sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So they're pretty cool. Management's pretty cool with you bringing as much stuff as you do.
I try to bring as much as I can. That's a touchy subject, I guess. But you know, I try to, you know, because I want those ladies to sound good and whoever I'm working for sound good, and them not to think about it, you know. I usually tell her that, hey, I'm bringing this head, I'm bringing the cabinet, so we should be fine.
Oh, okay.
But what if something happens in the shipping? You know, what if it doesn't make it? What if, you know, you got to be ready for the what if.
Well,
that's mainly my job, is the what if.
How much are you able to repair on site? Like, for example, if an amp breaks or something, how much can you do?
I'm not an amp builder. I can do some minor things that I've learned through the years. And guitar-wise, I'm not a luthier, but I'm a, you know, fix and repair daily if I have to, you know, or I have, you know, folks by my side that can help. We all try to pitch in as a team, you know, what one person can't
right.
do. You know, my job is, if I can't fix it, find somebody who can.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically a roadie's job.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have the phone book. You got to have your phone book ready and know people. And there you go.
Well, we're almost out of time. Can you really quickly recommend, if somebody's interested in doing this kind of a gig, what do you recommend they do to get started, to get into it?
Don't. No. work for – I mean, I started – I mean, some of the first bands – I mean, like I said, I was going to be a chef. I wanted to be a chef. And I started working for some local bands, and one band got a little bit bigger. I worked for a really cool chef who let me out on the weekends to go work. One of the first bands I worked for was Jason and the Scorchers from Nashville, Tennessee. And they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I had a choice of – I was making this much money as being a chef, and they offered me $50 more and a flashlight, and I went. And I guess I haven't turned back, you know. And that was the mid-'80s, and it's been – I've been definitely – I'm definitely not the best that does it, but I'm blessed with a lot of the people I've worked with. I've worked for people I really like. I can't really have too many undesirable people I've worked for. I've been definitely very blessed with the people I've worked for, and it's been a great career, and it still is. Still have a lot of fun at it. I still love rock and roll, and I work for wonderful ladies, and I have for a long time. And I mean, I do other things. I'm a big gardener. I mean, I have like a coffee shop that I have on the stage with me that I think you saw in pictures.
Yeah, I think it's on the picture that I posted.
That's part of our thing, you know. I'm a on-stage barista. I'm kind of a butler. I'm a rock and roll butler, basically.
So you definitely cook for them, too. You've cooked for them.
I've cooked in their houses and stuff and built some gardens for them. I built guitar-shaped gardens and, you know, taken care of the dogs, driven the kids to school and all kinds of stuff and hung out. And they're definitely – they're my big sisters. And, I mean, so much, and I've worked for – I'll say I've worked for children for about 30 years, and I've just written a kid's book about my dog, a rescue dog, Carl the Grateful Dog, and I've got a book out now about him. It's called Carl the Grateful Dog, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. There's my shameless plug.
There you go.
So, you know, I love dogs and training dogs and working. I trained him to be a service animal, so he does hospitals and nursing homes and stuff. It's a pet therapy dog. And so,
I saw him on stage. Do you take him on tour or just
he was in St. Augustine. He whenever I can, but mainly he's at home. He has work to do here. And when I'm home, I have a friend, a lady that I wrote the book with. She looks after Carl when I'm gone, and he does a lot of the hospitals and nursing homes here in St. Augustine. And so he's a busy guy, but when he goes to a lot of shows with me in town here. We go to a lot of shows, and he's been to a few festivals, and he's a big John Prine fan, and John Prine loves him. And he goes. I take him about everywhere with me when I'm at home.
That's cool. And then I expect you're going to be doing a cookbook, being a chef, how to cook on the road.
That's I always wanted to. I always wanted to do a cookbook years ago called The People Cooking for the People Who Party, cooking for people who maybe abuse themselves, but then you have a good meal to make you feel better next day. That was way back when I wanted to do that. But I'm doing another book. Me and my friend Penny Wagner, we're doing another book about Carl. We have a 4-book deal that we're doing, and the next one is called Carl in Concert with a K. It's Carl with a K and Concert with a K, because he goes to a lot of concerts with me, and it's his little adventures of going to concerts with me and stuff. So, you know, he's the only one that understands me, I think, as he's sleeping on the couch right now. So,
well, that's it. We're out of time. I want to thank you again, Jeff, for being on the show. It's a pleasure, and we're definitely going to have you back on.
Yep. Okay, yeah, I can talk about a lot of the other bands that I work for and stuff, and probably maybe some jokes and whatever.
Well, we want to thank Sweetwater,
and
too.
More nightmares and interesting stories that there's no way I could have made that up. Stories.
Okay. Hang on. We'll talk to you right after the show. And, yes, okay. We want to thank Sweetwater for sponsoring us. And, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week.